Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. This is episode number 56, and my name is David Langiuli.
And I'm Janice Cutting. And we have with us today a special guest, Kathy Mann, who's the president of Fundraising Lab, and Kathy Mann and Associates. So welcome, Kathy.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So why don't you give our listeners a sense of what you do at Fundraising Lab and Kathy Mann and Associates.
Yeah, thank you for giving me this opportunity. Kathy Mann Associates is a fundraising consultancy firm. We work primarily in the world of social change, social justice. So our clients are working with folks who are experiencing homelessness or food insecurity or violence against women. I also have some clients then who do animal care. I have a rescue dog, so it's a particular passion of mine. But that's kind of the world that I inhabit. And working with folks who are activists has really informed how I do fundraising and how I help them do fundraising. So that's Kathy Mann Associates. And then the Fundraising Lab is our online and digital learning platform or brand, mm-hmm. where we run courses. We just launched our flagship course, Developing Your Strategic Fundraising Plan from Fundamentals to Fairy Dust, on Monday. And there'll be some new developments in the coming months.
Great.
Awesome. All right. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes. And tell everybody where in the world you are.
I am, that feels like, isn't that a show, a TV show, where in the world is somebody? I'm in Dundas, so Hamilton, Ontario.
Mm-hmm. Not far from Toronto. So.
Yes.
Yeah, great. So you wrote a blog post, which we'll link to in the show notes, so everyone can read that if they haven't already, about really like creating the right environment for fundraising to thrive. And it's based on this idea of the enabling ecology approach. So we wanted you to explain, like, where did that come from and what excited you about that approach?
Yeah. So I'll really briefly just talk about what it is and then talk about the genesis of it. So the first important point about the fundraising enabling ecology approach is that, like, philanthropy is about more than just fundraising revenue. I believe it's actually part of your organization's mission. Mm-hmm. And many organizations don't necessarily agree with that or haven't thought that through and see fundraising as very separate and distinct from mission delivery. But if fundraising is going to succeed, you have to create the enabling ecology. You have to create the right ecosystem so that it can thrive. And that's a bit of a shift. Like, I think lots of organizations think that fundraising is done over there in the corner. There's this, you know, phenomenon that we've all experienced where service delivery and fundraising are two distinct entities.
Yeah, that's like, and those people
yeah,
are doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I literally, you know, I know fundraisers have these stories, but literally one of my early jobs, I got an office in the basement, like, where nobody ever went, you know, and they're like, oh good, we've got the fundraiser, let her raise money. And I'm like, where are the people? But in terms of the fundraising's enabling ecology approach, there's, you know, my hypothesis is that there's four main elements to it. And the kind of the mechanics of it are the fundraising strategies, direct mail, corporate giving, foundation grant writing, and then the infrastructure. So all those things that you need to support the strategies. And that's kind of the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. But the heart and soul of the enabling ecology approach really is the culture of philanthropy and the organizational values and how they inform your fundraising program. And the genesis of this was that, you know, like many people, I focused on the strategies and the infrastructure, making sure that those got built up. And over the years, as I, you know, entered, as once I became a consultant, I was seeing this pattern over and over again where I could go into organizations and set up all of the structure and still they weren't going to raise money. Mm. And so, you know, we hear a lot about culture of philanthropy. So that became the next thing with my clients that I really tried to talk about and get them to adopt. And I had a client who kept pushing back on the things that I would recommend that she do. And when I was writing this approach, I said, hey, can I talk to you about this? And here are the elements that I think. And I talked about values. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm so glad you finally included this notion of values. She said, but I think it should be the lead. I think that's what you have to start with. And so, you know, in my article, it's not the lead, but but the fact that it is an important part of the discussion now in the framework when I work with clients, I think has given some people a sense of comfort about fundraising that they didn't have before. You know, so many of my clients, as I said, work with populations that are marginalized, and values-based work is so important to them. And to have fundraising operate off in this silo where the organizational values don't necessarily impact or influence or inform fundraising, I think added to the level of discomfort that people already had about fundraising. So being able to talk about fundraising based on the values of the organization, I think gives people a sense of comfort, and it gives you a framework to allow organizations to begin to talk about how to narrow that chasm between service delivery and fundraising.
I'm curious, Kathy, how you're seeing this show up in any, or not for that matter, in your work with boards. Janice and I are starting to work with boards more, and more around the question of leadership. And of course, if boards are not integrating fundraising into the values and culture, then why would the staff do that? So yeah. Just curious what you're seeing.
Well, I think that, you know, even for me, having this discussion about values in the context of the fundraising program is a new discussion. And some people just did it implicitly, but I would say that it needs to be explicit. And so in terms of board members, you know, I think there are, listen, I want to celebrate and honor the volunteers who help our sector. And I want to be realistic about the fact that after 25 years or more working in this sector, I see many board members who don't exactly understand how they can be a support system to a robust fundraising program. So I think that having the conversation about values up front, especially with board members, would be, I think would be important. My take on it is that the leader, the executive director, has to start that conversation with them, guide that conversation so that they can begin to adopt and implement values as part of the discussion. And I've got some, I can think about examples of in my past of organizations, you know, being willing to accept money from an industry that made no sense for them to accept money from. And they said, well, as long as it's anonymous, we can accept money from.
No, that is so out of integrity.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a classic example of where you should look at your organizational values.
Obviously, that organization did not have integrity as a value. It's something that Janice and I do share.
Yeah. Well, and it's been striking me how you were saying a few minutes ago, like it does really start with values, but the article doesn't. And I think that's almost like the road in is this holistic approach that you're taking, where you're kind of reassuring people that it is about the mechanics and it is about raising money and it's about culture and principles, you know. And I suspect with you and your work, it's sort of navigating that, how do I get the message across in a way that people will actually be willing to listen to?
You've nailed it, Janice, because the truth is that, you know, when my colleague, this former client of mine, said, no, you need to lead with values, I thought, no, I can't, because I know that people hire me because they want to raise money and they have a narrow view or a limited view because they haven't experienced it of what that means. And so I need to speak that language to them and engage them and then help broaden the view of what fundraising can be over time. But it's like donor communications, right? Like you don't want to create cognitive dissonance right off the bat, right? So you want to be having a conversation with people that they're going to be able to absorb. And then slowly over time, you build that relationship and you add new elements and broaden the conversation. So that's why I intentionally started with the mechanics, the strategies. And the
like, we're going to raise money. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And more money, you know.
And I think that's such an important piece, right? Is that we are going to raise money. And by the way, we're going to do it in a way that really supports and is in alignment with your organizational values. By the way, you sort of like sneak that one in after the fact.
So I'm curious, like if maybe you could share a story of, to kind of bring this to life a little, to like how paying attention to the culture, particularly, and the principles could transform an organization in terms of being able to raise more money.
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing it now in this current pandemic. So, you know, I've seen many organizations that have decided that they're not going to ask for money because everybody's out there asking for money and it's a crisis and all the money should go to the frontline workers. And I look at organizations, and one of the really common values that I see in organizations is respect, right? We're going to treat everybody at organization XYZ with respect. And my question to those organizations who have said, we're not asking donors to support us at this time, is, are you actually treating your donors with respect? Mm. Are you treating them like people who have agency and who can make their own decisions? Mm-hmm. If somebody donates to you, presumably, you hope, they care about your cause. And so by denying them the opportunity to make a donation, are you treating them with respect? And so I think that, you know, and I've had this conversation with a couple mm-hmm. of my clients, and it's another lens through which you can help make some decisions about fundraising.
Here's another question. Are you respecting yourself, mm-hmm. the people in your organization, and the people you serve by not asking for money?
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Seems like respect is getting trampled on, but you know, this is what happens when fear grips us. When we get gripped by fear, we get away from our values. I see that, even mm-hmm. with myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. And I think that, you know, organizations, everybody in the first few weeks were paralyzed, right? We didn't know what to do. We couldn't envision what the next week was going to look like, let alone make decisions about fundraising. So I understand where that came from. And I'm glad that some folks who've heard me speak over the past couple of weeks have made a decision to go ahead with a direct mail campaign, you know, based on this notion of like, let your donors decide. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the other value that I see, especially in this current context, is this notion of transparency. I see a lot of organizations that have that as a value. Mm-hmm. And yet in fundraising, and this isn't just unique to the pandemic, but in fundraising, I would say we're not particularly transparent with our donors, in that we've kind of been taught as fundraisers to just share the good news stories, tell them all the great things that their donor dollars are doing, which is important. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, if donors are real partners and they care about you, they actually want to know what's going on when things aren't so great. And so, you know, how do we balance that need for showing donors that we are doing great work with being really honest about some of the difficult times that organizations are facing?
Yeah. You know, there's a big piece of our work is really challenging assumptions, you know, whether that's like individually with coaching clients one-on-one or whether it's working with teams. And that's what's coming up for me as you're saying it. It's like a lot of assumptions are being made Mm-hmm. And this is not the time to make assumptions. Like, this is the time to be in connection, be in relationship, and be in conversation, and actually sensing, like, what is needed and what does your organization need? But more importantly, like you're saying, what do your donors actually want to do? Let them make that choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say, you know, this is a difficult time. There are lots of people in hardship. So if you are approaching your donors, like, you need to be sensitive to the context, to the time that we're in. But also, yeah, don't let donors, you know, exercise their agency.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, don't make any assumptions about what donors are thinking or not thinking. Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I will say I personally, you know, am a supporter of the Toronto Public Library. And for a few weeks, I kept thinking, like, what could I do? And I was starting to see stories about, great, like, they're pivoting, they're opening as food banks because the branches are closed right now. They're giving kids, like, free books, you know, as part of the food bank. And I was thinking, oh, this is so great. And then I finally made a gift. You know why? Because they sent me an email and asked me to make a gift. Yeah. You know, like, it was there in me. Like, I want to do something. And then it's like, oh, this is something concrete that I can do. That is something that is already one of, like, I already have such a passion for this organization and what it does. Yeah. And I can see now, like, how they're making their own contribution during this, you know?
Yeah.
And then they asked. Well,
yeah. I mean, I love that, you know, what's the number one reason that people give, you know, it's because they were asked. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so simple, right? Like, we have to remember to ask sometimes. You know, it's interesting. Something you said, David, though, made me think about a client who I think had as an implicit value humility. Mm-hmm. And the way, and this, God, so many of my clients are so modest and they won't toot their own horns. But this was an organization that was trying to, you know, get fundraising going, and they were doing things really differently. And they talked about how they were, you know, trying to start a movement and to really shift how we work in the sector. And I said, do you think humility is something that's going to support this notion of you starting a movement? Like, let's rethink that value of humility. And what does it mean? Why do you have humility? Why is humility important to you? How does it impede your ability to start a movement and have a much bigger impact in the sector? And what's a new way of looking at humility and still allow you to play a bigger role and to catalyze the sector differently? And that I remember actually kind of having a bit of a bit of an argument where there was raised voices at a table in a group at that meeting.
Yeah, like, there's with every value or every virtue, there's kind of a bit of a dark side, which is what you're pointing at. So, yes, humility is a virtue and a value, and it can, we call it like having your lid up or having your lid down. When your lid is up, when your lid, it's like a garbage can. When your lid is up, you're lit up. Like, you're just excited about what you're up to in the world. There's nothing bragging about it. You're just, we're doing great stuff. We're starting a movement. And will you come along? Well, if your lid is down because you have a value or a virtue around humility, you're not able to tell your story in a way that's going to enroll. What we mean by enroll is like touch, move, and inspire other people to follow you. So yes, it's good to be humble and also be lit up or lid up, as we say.
Yeah. So that feels like a great segue to kind of giving the listener something to try. So why don't you give us what you want to challenge people to do from listening?
Yeah. Okay. So I think that this time in our history is asking us to be bold and to be brave and to reimagine the world that we want to live in. And so I will invite listeners to be bold and to begin to have the conversation about values within their organization. And the reason that I say that is bold is because those are messy conversations, right? Values are not cut and dried. It's not like, you know, here's the formula for raising money in this through this strategy. It can lead to some passionate conversations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and our organization so often do this thing like this dysfunctional politeness. You know, mm-hmm. boards have this practice of dysfunctional politeness, and it doesn't allow things to actually get done. So I invite people to be bold and begin to have conversations about values. You can only influence, you know, within your sphere of influence. So, but regardless of where you are in an organization, you do have some influence. So begin to have those conversations within your sphere of influence and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And I love that it's like, the being bold is really bringing passion to it. I think it is challenging assumptions. It's being more flexible. Like, what can that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean right now in this moment, right? Because if you did your values several years ago, it's always good, you know, whatever situation we're in, things are always changing, to kind of go back mm-hmm. and say, like, what does that mean to me now? And what decisions does that inform, right?
Oh, yeah. And just one thing I will say, that, you know, I talk about it as values, and in the Enabling Ecology Approach article, I talk about it as guiding principles. And so really the difference is just, I think guiding principles are translating your values mm-hmm. into actionable items, so that you can really just apply your guiding principles to any decision making that you need to do.
Yeah. Great.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with the fundraising leadership community. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your stand for nonprofit organizations to really live their values and incorporate fundraising into their principles and their culture. So important that it's an integrated approach. So there's a lot of wisdom in there. We will link to your blog post in the show mm-hmm. notes for the podcast.
Right.
And
how can people find you, Kathy?
Yeah.
If they want to find you.
Yeah. So you can find me at fundraisinglab.ca, kathyman.ca, and on LinkedIn, let's look me up, Kathy Mann, and Twitter at Kathy J Mann.
All right.
And that's so, man with two N's. Just
oh,
in case
man with two N's at the
Kathy,
end. Yes.
And Kathy with a C.
Kathy with a C. Thank you for asking. It's pronounced slightly differently than from those who spell it with a K. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Yeah. And you can, of course, find the Fundraising Leadership podcast at our website, fundraisingleadership.org, and also you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. We invite you to subscribe so you can get our podcast just about every 2 weeks, where you can hear wonderful leaders like Kathy Mann and others that join us to share their wisdom with our community. And so now we will end, as we always end, go put this into practice. Yeah.